Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, we have a guest representing an organization that spoke at the most recent GeoMob Finland, which was held in early April. And so I'm excited we get a perspective from someone who was able to attend that event. Specifically, my guest is Sanna Jokela, who is the CEO of a company called JISPO. And they presented at the event about a project that they did with the UNESCO's International Institute for Educational Planning. Very interesting project. Also interesting because I think the juxtaposition of a Finnish company, or I guess now Scandinavian company, because I guess you're in multiple countries, working on a project targeting sub-Saharan Africa. So, Sanna, welcome to the show. Maybe tell us a bit about yourself and your journey into geospatial and about your business.
So I'm Sanna from Finland, living in Turku, which is a southwest Finnish town. In Finland, I have been working in geospatial field for the past 20 years. So I'm a geographer, and since 2016, I have been working in JISPO, and for the past 3 years as a CEO. And we had a geomob in Turku a few weeks ago, and my colleague was presenting in this project that we did with the UNESCO IEP about the rainfalls situation and school calendars in sub-Saharan Africa. But yeah, what do you want to know?
Well, give us a bit of background about your organization, first of all. I mean, how big is the company? Who are your typical customers? Yeah, help us put into context exactly tenants.
Yeah, JISPO, we are at the moment 25 plus people. We are doing only open source geospatial stuff. So QGIS, PostGIS, and GeoServer are our tools. And we have been mainly working in Finland, but last year we started our company in Sweden, JISPO Sweden. It was established, and our normal customer is a public sector, municipality or government sector, but we have been doing a lot of stuff also with the global providers like UNESCO, for example, and UN. So we are kind of local, but then global, and now we're starting our Scandinavian business also in Sweden. So,
and if I understand correctly, just based on your website, very strong emphasis kind of on free software, QGIS. That's kind of the direction you're working.
Yeah. QGIS is our main tool. We are offering training support services, also doing a bit of core development together with our clients and other partners. But then we do lots of like infrastructure stuff, like geospatial infrastructure building and designing, and then our projects vary from logistics to forestry, or from agriculture to land use planning. So we don't have any certain field that we are very focused on. We do everything if it involves open data, open source, geospatial issues.
Before we dive into the specifics of the project, is that normal in Finland? That is there a strong emphasis on the open source basis, or does government mainly use Esri, or right? Maybe there's some other tool. I don't know, but
I think there has been a shift towards open source for the past 2 or 3 years, the National Land Survey of Finland has stated that it's their strategy to choose open source whenever it's possible. The Environmental Center of Finland has started to use QGIS, PostGIS server. And I think there is a trend of switching from commercial software to open source. And in the municipalities, I have seen for the past year or two, I think that the QGIS trainings have arisen. So we have been quite busy training people to use QGIS, for example, in Finland. But
nice.
But in Fantastic. Sweden, it's a totally different situation. So there we have some work to do still.
All right. Well, one step at a time, I guess. Yeah. But okay. Well, let's get into this project that your colleague Mary presented in Turku a couple weeks ago. Specifically, you're working for the UNESCO, and they're in a Institute for Educational Planning. And if I understand correctly, it was using rainfall data to find optimal school hours. Give us the brief. What exactly was the assignment? And then let's get into how exactly did you approach it?
There is a historical problem in many African countries about when the schools are open, because the school calendar might be like coming from some like 200 years ago and based on European standards or so the school calendar is not very well fitted to the country. Probably, and because the countries are also quite large, so the same calendar doesn't fit the northern parts of the country, and the same can't be used in the southern parts because the rain, for example, rainfall is different in different places in the country. And the UNESCO wanted to, they had this idea that what if we just check what would be the optimal days or weeks in a year, and not just check what is happening, what is the actual school calendar, but check the dates based on rainfall data. And the problem during the heavy rainfall seasons that you just can't go to school, and that I asked the UNESCO people that is it the problem that the roads are so bad that the kids can't go to school, but the main problem is the noise because the rain is pounding on the roof, you can't hear anything.
So when you say rainfall, I'm assuming not like a light drizzle. This is like a monsoon style rain. Am I imagining that correctly? Or
yes, I think so. That when we're talking about rainy season, then it's usually not very optimal to work or go to school anyhow. And then there is the other side that then the children are still in some countries going to help the parents in the fields. So those weeks of the year that you are required to go and crop whatever plants they have growing there or cattle or whatever, then you can't go to school. So there are only a few times of the year that might be suitable for school going. So, but now we wanted to focus only on the rainfall. The next phase might be the crop seasons. But yeah.
Okay. And so, what was the desired kind of output that you were supposed to produce? Would this be like digital maps?
Yeah, we were thinking about the outcome quite a lot because that we didn't know what to do. We had the data, we had the assignment that we need to check what are the suitable dates, but is it a map or something else, the end result? What is it that was to be decided during the project? And what we did was firstly processed the process so that it had four steps. First, we wanted to gather the data, download the data, and then created daily mean analysis on the data. So for each day, yearly mean separately for each year. And then chose the area of interest, country or sub-region or whatever you want to have, municipality even. And then calculate the uninterrupted periods of the analysis. So longest time period that has precipitation only under the threshold given. And and then create this kind of calendar heat map. So it wasn't a map per se, their end result, although this was a geospatial problem. The end result was a calendar, like this table calendar that you can check what dates during the year are the more rainy. And of course, we don't know that what is the threshold, what is too much rain or too little rain or whatever. So the user can just pick the threshold themselves and set the parameters so that it fits the country or the region.
Which how many countries are we talking about here? How many regions?
You can do it basically everywhere now. We tested it with some countries that the UNESCO IAP had in contact with, but basically you can do it anywhere.
I see. So it's more kind of like you're building a kind of model that can be applied to any. I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So we did a QGIS plugin that fetches Google Earth data. The data is not free if you're a company, but for UNESCO it was free to use. But you can also use some other data sets if you want to in the background. Then the QGIS plugin just gives you certain steps to follow, and then you get the end result, which is this kind of a, it would be easier to show you, but if I have to describe it, it's like a calendar with a red days that are not suitable for going to school, then the rain is too heavy, and then blue days or white days are much easier to go to the school.
One of the first things that leaps out to me here, Sana, is so immediately there are so many things here that I got wrong in my assumptions about this project, in the sense of, I mean, the fact that I assumed the output would be like a map or something, and you're telling me it's a calendar. Obviously, I assumed the issue was that, you know, torrential rains mean that people can't travel, but the reality, you know, you said one of the issues is the sound. And I'll be very open with you. One of the things that I found, interesting about this project is why is a small company from Finland the one chosen to work on this kind of sub-Saharan Africa project? I mean, do you have extensive experience there or something, or how did that come about? Actually,
we have been developing a few plugins for the same client before, so I don't even remember how they came to be our client. I think it was Twitter or something that they found out that we existed. Then when Twitter was still Twitter, I think it was around during the Corona time when the global organizations realized that they can't meet their suppliers anymore in a conference or something, then they needed to reach out via social media or other means. And I think that they just found that we are doing interesting stuff with QGIS. And then we had one project, and then we had another, and then another and another. So we have been doing few QGIS plugins for them and some data analysis things and so forth.
Congrats. That's wonderful. That's good. Did you or members of your team actually go to any of these countries? Did you do any field work to like validate kind of the models, or how did that happen?
No, we haven't visited any of the places, but I know that the UNESCO is going to discuss these issues with the local politicians and decision makers, probably, because all these tools that they are making are for the government of a country who is designing, for example, school activities. So they are going to these countries.
So would you say the project was a success? I mean, is the plugin being used? And I mean, is it having?
It's very freshly from the oven. So the UNESCO is testing it right now, I think, and they are probably thinking about some other new applications or new development issues on that. I really don't know at the moment how they are going to use it, but I probably know more when I see them in Fosfosi part of this July, when we have a huge get together with the open source people.
Is there some sort of process for feedback to come? I mean, one of the issues I can imagine here is, I mean, you know, you are contracted by UNESCO, and then UNESCO works with probably, a national government, and then that goes to a regional government, and then that goes to a school administrator. I mean, it's a very long chain, if you see what I mean, for the feedback actually to get back to you and to get for someone
and
to tell you.
This was just a small test that can this be done, and we haven't matched the results with the actual calendar. So if there is a conflict between the actual school calendars that they are using now and this rainfall calendar, and then maybe we should add the crop calendar also to get more information, what are the suitable weeks or months to go to school. So
I see. I guess in theory, if it's a QGIS plugin, then it's open source, right? So in theory, the local administration could also, you know, contribute back fixes or changes and things like that. Is that the goal?
Yeah, and they can use it whatever they like. And it's so nice to have this cooperation with UNESCO, because small things, this is quite a small project for us. It only took like 2-3 months to work this. But there is a huge impact on the community or the world with these small tools. We had another tool with the UNESCO that calculates the catchment area of how long does it take for a student to go to school by bike or by foot. And it uses OpenStreetMap as a background, as the routing engine. And they tested in Madagascar, and the local government people were like, this isn't working. And they realized that why it wasn't working was that they didn't have data in OpenStreetMap. So they put all the kids in the area or in the schools to map their, digitize their school roads. And after 2 weeks, the analysis was successful. The tool that we made, very small QGIS plugin, very simple, affected to enhancing OpenStreetMap in Madagascar.
And that's amazing.
This is great.
Well done. I mean, that's the power of everyone contributing to one database and one, you know, kind of code repository. For years I've thought, I mean, I know there have been individual efforts everywhere, but I've often thought OpenStreetMap is such a perfect tool for schools, because you know, in schools, children learn geography. They have to learn about the community. So it's a very, it would be a very natural assignment to have them kind of map their local community. And the best part is, obviously, every year there are new school children. So every year you could kind of refresh the map and redo it. You know, I guess, you know, it's not quite as simple as all that.
We're doing that in Turku. There is a always one new 40 people generating new data to OpenStreetMap because they go have a course in high school to correct the OpenStreetMap.
I get very frustrated because my children, you know, at the school, they do some basics of like map reading, but it's just using Google Maps and, you know, it's not, they immediately get trained how to do Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, you know, you can see it's just a feeder system into these proprietary systems instead of actually learning, you know, how to contribute back. So frustrating.
Man.
Tommy.
Well, congratulations on this project. So they're very cool that, you know, very interesting to see kind of the global reach of a, let's say, a smaller organization in Finland. That's exciting. Maybe while you're here, you can give us a bit of your overview of kind of the Finnish GIS scene, the Finnish geospatial scene in general. Well, as someone who's been a participant for a while, what's your take on things?
Yeah, there are quite many geospatial companies in Finland. Open source is growing. There are many companies that are doing stuff with open source, but also with proprietary software. We have lots of open data available, which is really, really good. I think that
from the government, or how do you
measure? Government and municipalities, the National Land Survey has opened up their basic maps and aerial photographs. Was it in 2012?
So was that due to some sort of government mandate, or was that just someone in the organization decided this would be a good thing? Or
I'm not really, I don't know, but my guess is that it was due to OpenStreetMap. So OpenStreetMap was pushing the governments and municipalities to open up their data, because otherwise people would start using OpenStreetMap. And there was at that time a speculation that is it good enough or what to do with it. But also that they did... I think they did some kind of survey on what are the costs to still sell the data versus the costs for the whole society when they open the data. So what are the benefits? And they saw the benefits much bigger, and it has been so that now it's so easy to start a company and do maps. And I see this in Sweden, because they don't have open data at the moment. It's very, very difficult to do the things that we do here in Finland.
Well, first of all, congratulations to Finland and thank you to everyone who got involved and made those decisions. Yeah, it's so hard. We've seen this dynamic play out in so many different countries, where the problem is, though, the costs of opening the data and maintaining the data, you know, are carried by typically one organization or one branch of government. And the benefits are very distributed across all society and hard to measure. You know, it's hard to measure that someone was able to start a company a little bit more quickly or something like that. So hopefully hopefully Finland will be an example to some of the other countries in the region as well. And
I think I see the history of geospatial side in our field, so that first the data was opened. So 10 years it was data opening. Now open source is coming. So the next 10 years is probably using open source more. But then what is happening after that 10 years? I don't know what is the next stage of openness.
Well, by then the AI will have replaced all of us, so I will be going to doing any more work. So, your projects are mainly focused on Finland, or do you work quite internationally, like this project for UNESCO, and would you say the geospatial scene in general is kind of more inward looking on the needs of Finland, or is it more targeting the world?
We would like to do more globally, of course, but main projects are from Finland and very, very specific for Finnish national laws, tied to national laws and national data sets. But I think the geospatial field is a bit different from other fields, that you actually have to know a lot about the national legislation, national data sets, in order to work in that country. For example, there are stuff you can do globally, like using OpenStreetMap or some other global data sets. But when you start looking more into a nationality or a nation, you start to realize that you can't understand the legislation, you can't understand the data unless you are involved in that scene. So that's why we need, for example, in Sweden, we have a Swedish person there. We couldn't go to Sweden and do stuff from Finland right away. But we have to have a certain person there who knows what to do and knows the people, knows the data, knows the law, so forth. But some stuff you can do globally.
Good combination. Yeah. So the combination of local and global, I think, is a strong one, where you can, you know, be involved in the local community and meet their specific needs, but also outward looking and able to do projects like this project that you described with UNESCO. So I think it's a powerful combination. Sanna, as we wrap up, maybe, so you attended the recent GeoMob in Turku. What was your impression? How did it go?
Yeah, it was really, really nice. There were like these flash talks, and I learned a lot from those little projects that the presenters were having. And I think we should have more go to the pub, as you described in the how GeoMob usually works in other countries. We didn't go to a pub, so I'm a bit sad about that.
Yeah.
We should always go for a geo beers after and discuss these issues.
Yeah, well, you know, what we found is there are two pieces to that. So one is, first of all, keeping the talk short, I think it's very good. So, you know, sometimes you go to an event and they have a talk and then you have like 10 minutes of questions and people start asking really detailed, bogged down questions. And if you're not that interested in the topic, you get, you know, you start to zone out and it makes the event kind of long and it drags on. And so we keep the talks very short with only one or two questions. And then the questions happen afterwards at the pub. And what we have found also is the physically going to the pub, it creates a very different dynamic in that it you're then in a social place. And like, you know, like sometimes we have a GeoMob in London at a university and students will come or whatever. But if you're in a classroom, or in a lecture hall, then you have the dynamic of kind of the professor and the students, and it's not relaxed, you know, and you might not. So when you go to the pub, you're instantly in a different dynamic and you're much more in a kind of, we're all colleagues and we're all equal. And then, you know, you can maybe ask someone, people feel less inhibited to ask the questions and to interact and to make connections. So I do recommend that. So, okay, well, please pass that feedback on to the GeoMob Finland organizers. I can say, as someone who has organized GeoMob for many years, it's so cool to see the GeoMob model going to other countries like Finland, where I never would have in my wildest dreams have thought there's going to be a GeoMob in Turku. So now the next step is I need to physically attend the next one. So maybe someday I'll make it to Turku. So
you're very welcome here.
Wow. Thank you very much for taking the time to come here on the podcast and tell us your story. Sana, very interesting. What is the best way for someone to get in touch with you if they have further questions?
Yeah, just go to our website, www.gispo.fi, and there's contact information for all our team. So just send me an email, sanna@gispo.fi.
Okay, we'll be sure, of course, to have all that in the show notes. So, okay. Thank you very much, Sana.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Please get in touch with us if you have any feedback or suggestions for topics we should cover. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly mailing list where we keep you informed about upcoming events. You can also follow us on Twitter, where our handle is GeoMob. Thanks again for listening, and hope to see you at a GeoMob event soon.